Hello and welcome to the Hospitality Against Homelessness podcast from Only a Payment Away. I'm your host, Mark Stretton. I've been around the industry for 20 years, first as a business journalist at the Sunday Times, then editing publications like The Publican and MCA, before co-founding Fleet Street. On this podcast, each week I'll be speaking to a visionary hospitality leader who is changing the landscape and transforming lives through the power of hospitality. Our mission with this podcast is to expand the conversation around the opportunity hospitality has to make the world a better place. This is the podcast for people in hospitality who are passionate about our industry and ready to help transform lives. Kate Nichols, OBE, is the voice and face of the hospitality industry, to government and policymakers, and to the media and the wider public. As CEO of UK Hospitality, Kate speaks for a sector that employs around 3.5 million people, many more through the supply chain, and one that generates around 50 billion of tax to fund key public services such as the NHS. Kate has spent her entire career in and around politics and political lobbying, shaping and driving public policy and communications campaigns. She started her working life in government relations at Whitbread. She joined what is now UK Hospitality some 20 years ago, and next year will mark 10 years for Kate as CEO. During the course of our chat, we talk about her role, the development of UKH, and what's on the agenda as we head into a general election. We also talk about the pandemic, when it seemed Kate was across the media and across our TV screens 24/7. We discuss the challenges of promoting the amazing successes in our industry, but also drawing attention to the peril and the issues that could damage our sector. And of course, we discuss Only a Payment Away and the massive opportunity this industry has as a force for good. We are, as an industry, lucky to have Kate. It was a real privilege to talk to her, and we really hope you enjoy the listen. Hi, Kate. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Mark.
For anyone that doesn't know your background and story, if you like, perhaps you could just give us a quick potted history of how you came to be CEO of UK Hospitality.
Well, it's always been politics and hospitality. So, I mean, I always say I started out being a frustrated journalist. That was what I intended to do. And when you talk about careers and opportunities in planning, my career's never really been planned, or the best laid plans have gone awry. But I was due to have a journalism as an apprenticeship straight after university, graduated in the recession in 1991. And they told me to go away, get a little bit of experience and come back in a year. And I went and had a one-year research contract in the European Parliament. And then my boss at the time said I wasn't busy enough in Strasbourg and Brussels and London, so I should also work in the House of Commons. So that's how I got into politics, sort of doing all of that. And I did it for about 4 years and never went back to journalism. But that was what got me into hospitality, because I was doing all the reports at the time in the European Parliament about food labelling, food additives, lobbied heavily by the brewers because beer was under threat. Lots of our foods, our best loved foods, were under threat. And they came and lobbied me. And then on the back of it, Whitbread said, could I go and join them, work as government relations manager, and do all of their policy work and advise the board on the issues of today? So I started in hospitality and then never looked back. And I've been fortunate enough to work through a variety of roles, bringing together politics, hospitality, and communications.
Most importantly, tell us about prawn cocktail. Well, saving beer and saving prawn cocktail crisps, which, to be honest, are two of my favourite things.
Well, it depends what your listeners are really into. So I can claim to have saved beer, prawn cocktail crisps, or chocolate, because at the time, European Commission was doing a whole load of changes in legislation, harmonising all the legislation across Europe about food additives, colourings, flavourings, and the way foods were described. So a chocolate one. We weren't going to be allowed to call dairy milk chocolate because it didn't have enough cocoa solids. We weren't going to be able to keep some of the flavourings. At the time in Europe, they really didn't do many flavoured crisps, ready salted paprika. Those were the main ones. We had a lovely variety of flavours, including prawn cocktail. And they were going to ban the flavouring that would have allowed you to do prawn cocktail crisps. And then most importantly, given that we're recording in BrewDog, caramel and icing glass in beer would have been banned and we wouldn't have been able to have that. So a lot of big lobbying that went on, and I was writing the report. And so we wrote the report, got the legislation amended and changed. And my biggest claim to fame throughout my entire career, until we got to COVID, I think, is that I saved prawn cocktail crisp and managed to save all the additives we needed for beer.
Well, thank you very much. And I look forward to having a packet in celebration this weekend.
Absolutely.
What is the function of UK Hospitality?
So the trade body UK Hospitality is relatively recent. So it's only 5 years old. We merged and amalgamated about five other different groups to be able to create that one single united strong voice for the industry. And that's its primary purpose. So our role as a trade association, we are funded by our members. We work for our members. We're directed by the members. And those members are everything from the single site, independent pub, bar, restaurant, hotel, guest house, and breakfast, cafe, right the way through to the national chains. But we're there to do their bidding. We are there to be their collective voice and face. So it's about promoting the reputation of the sector as a great place to grow, work, and invest, making sure that we've got the right environment within which they can survive. So protecting that commercial environment, preventing the imposition of the unnecessary costs, and also about providing advice and guidance on compliance to the businesses so they stay legal, stay safe, stay compliant, and then giving them the insight they need to be able to develop their business. And then latterly, coming out of the COVID pandemic, it's about being that reputation maker. It's about being that thought leader, driving forward the activities that the industry is doing, particularly around ESG and sustainability and being a good corporate citizen. So making sure we've got policies in place and practical steps that smaller businesses can take to meet carbon net zero, to meet the workforce challenge, to be an employer of choice, and then back that virtuous circle, promoting the sector as a great place to grow, work, and invest. So my job and role, so it is to be the voice and face, champion, the defender, the campaigner, and then the sort of thought leader.
So presumably you're having to talk to a lot of different government departments, some of whom may or may not talk to each other. And also you mentioned local government. There's a lot of stakeholders.
There's a lot of moving parts, a lot of stakeholders. And then also there's obviously the stakeholders within the industry, both those who are in membership and know what we're doing, get our regular cascade of information, and those who are outside who also want me to be doing what they feel needs to be done and directed. And so, you know, there's stakeholder engagement that you need to do over and above the day job, being in Parliament, being in Whitehall, being in the media. Important to be talking to the general public too, and to our potential employees, and having that responsibility about being the voice and face of an industry that employs 3.5 million people. You can't affect change, you can't help to deliver change unless you're part of that conversation. So it's really important that, as well as the campaigning and the noises that go off to the side, you've got that serious authoritative voice that's in at the heart of power at every level, trying to get the change that's desperately needed. You know, and that's what drives me, is there are millions of people who depend on me doing a good job, be able to get what they need and just to stay in business. And this is an industry that I've worked in 30 years that I feel passionately about, and now I want to see thrive.
Yeah, and I love that analogy or that thought about being one of the business groups that gets to walk into Downing Street, one of the four, five, six business groups alongside retail and manufacturing, because it's so simple and everyone can get that.
Yeah, and we were, you know, until you created UK Hospitality, until you got refocused on that, we were ignored. You would have the CBI as big business, FSB as small, manufacturing, retail, financial services. Those were the groups that went in.
Mm. And you talk about, you know, being the voice and the face of the sector as an organisation, but also I think that's you personally. And that certainly was the case 3 years ago, wasn't it? 3.5 years ago now. What was that like, and how do you reflect on that period?
It was intense and it was incredibly demanding and grueling. I sort of liken it to a series of marathons interspersed by sprints. And I self-star had to work really hard to keep the team motivated, to keep the team going. I was on sort of 2, 3, 4 daily calls when you had business leaders from the smallest upwards, really fearful for their business future. So I felt a huge responsibility, and that's really what kept me going throughout that whole period. When you look back on it, I don't quite know how I did it.
Yeah, it was an incredible time. I guess the question that I want to ask, but I'm not quite sure how to articulate it, is you had a good war. You did an amazing job for the sector, and you had a good war.
Look, they were the most difficult times that I've ever worked through, and it was pretty bleak. But it was also an opportunity to be able to seize every opportunity. You've got to take most of it. And I'm always firmly believing that you need to look for silver linings. And this was an opportunity to really demonstrate in real time how big and important we were, how economically important we were strategically, but also culturally, socially. There was never a better demonstration of how much the economy needed us and how much people needed us to keep morale going. So seize that, keep a hold of it, keep going, and then being able to just articulate it.
Yeah, because I mean, amid a terrible time from a health, national health perspective, but also from a business hospitality perspective, that was the legacy, wasn't it?
That was the legacy. You could see it in real time. And at the legacy and at national level, you could point to and say, look, that month we were open and GDP grew. This month we were closed and it failed. But also to demonstrate how much they relied upon hospitality. You know, who did they turn to when they needed to house the homeless and house the NHS workers and feed the NHS? And how much was it important to make sure that you could get that moving and looked after people? How important was it to get the economy moving once we came out of COVID, but also to get people socializing back together and get people a sense of normality? And you do see that translated through now. You know, sort of if you look at the sentiment trackers, when we do consumer pulse data about cost of living, 5 out of 10 will still prioritize eating and drinking out and socializing with friends for any of their disposable income. And that has to be partly a legacy of COVID. You don't know what you've got till it's gone. It was gone. You then value it when you come back to it. And that is always a dual case.
Can I ask you, thinking about that peril and jeopardy at that time, can I ask you about the pull between celebrating brilliant businesses and the brilliant successes of the sector as a lobbying and publicising organisation, but also about continuing to highlight peril and jeopardy and things that could damage the sector? How do you manage that balance?
It is a real delicate balancing act, and it's a tightrope. And obviously, you have to be fleet of foot and adapt depending on the circumstances that you're in. So it was quite right during the COVID period to be highlighting the jeopardy and highlighting the vulnerability of those businesses. So there was nothing to be gained by talking about success other than to be able to point to the fact that these were not zombie businesses. You know, when we went into, and that is a treasury mantra that keeps coming in, but, you know, as we went into COVID, there were certain businesses that were going to fail, and Wilko is another case on the high street. You know, retail was going through structural death throes, and there were some zombie businesses. That wasn't the case in hospitality. This was a vibrant industry that was growing, that was opening 5 sites a day pre-pandemic, and was the saviour of the high street post-financial crash. So you're right to highlight jeopardy. What I think we now need to do is to make sure that although you still need to flag the vulnerability of the sector, the fragility of the sector, we need to talk about the opportunity and the opportunity that is being foregone by the economy as a whole by not giving us support. So you always do link it back to support and how fragile those margins are. I always say politicians don't save dying industries, and you can only claim once, maybe twice, that if something doesn't happen, you are going to see swathes of businesses shut before politicians stop believing you. So you do need to be careful. You need to be very fact-based and evidence-based to make those kind of claims, which I think we have been able to do. And now it's about talking up the fact that you've got a mid-tier of the industry that are good, solid businesses that are just not able to grow and invest in the way they would be because of the challenges of debt and energy or of the cost of living, cost of doing business crisis and inflation. But then the upside, if the conditions are right, it will very rapidly recover. And that's the thing that I keep emphasising with politicians. This is a very responsive industry. If you put £1 into a customer's pocket, or you put it into our pocket by doing something around tax or business support, if you give it that little bit of boost on day one, day two, something will happen over the counter or over the bar, and day three, you'll be creating a new job. So the response rate of our industry is very rapid for coming out, and we can drag everybody else with us.
Presumably, you can't always say what you think. In terms of publicly, I think there's an expectation of you as a pressure group and a campaigning group.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't do that, can you?
No, you can't. I mean, you know, you have to be sensible and pragmatic and grown up as businesses. And we need to demonstrate that we are a grown up industry. There is a difference between noise and effective pressure. And sometimes it's about the iron fist in the velvet glove That might be very frustrating to people. What I do think I need to do is make sure I'm much better at explaining that as far as I can to everybody in the industry. We do a great job in linking up with our members, talking to our members, but there's a huge group outside that who are just unaware of what's going on and what the reality is. And, you know, I do get on a daily basis, people on Twitter will say, what's the point of all these meetings? You claim you've had these meetings, but what's the point? It's very vague. It's not happening. Where's the VAT cut? Where's the energy support? It's as frustrating for me as for them that I can't get them what they want and I can't get them what they need. And sometimes that's a timetabling issue. Government works in very fixed ways. Sometimes that's an expectation issue. We were hugely successful for 2 years in getting everything the industry asked for. I think people forget how much we got. £39 billion worth of support. We were more than any other sector. Furlough was designed explicitly to support hospitality. There might be flaws in the way it worked, but, and we've still got that support. You know, the biggest thing the Chancellor gave away in last spring's budget, it's never enough. It's never going to be enough. All I can do is make a really shit situation a little bit less shit. Sorry for swearing, but, you know, that's the reality of it. But the biggest thing we got in the spring budget, he didn't put up business rates by inflation and he gave a 7% rate relief. It's fine to say that's not good enough, but you need to be able to acknowledge that the support has been there. And I have to balance all those interests. And I'm not a campaign group, not a pressure group. I'm not a nighttime economy ambassador or a nighttime industry association. I am a representative trade body that has status with government, therefore, as a result of that, responsibilities to the members who fund it. And it means that I can't always say what I might want to say publicly, but equally, some of it's out of my hands. You know, I had somebody tweet me saying, you've had lots of meetings about rail strikes. Why have you not resolved the rail dispute? Funnily enough.
Why not, Kate? Why not?
Well, give me a couple more days. Funnily enough, I'm not a minister. I can't give the industry what it wants. I'm not a minister. I'm there to lobby ministers. I'm not a rail union, and nor am I an employer. You know, it's a bit unfair to come and go at the person who's trying to put the case.
It's frustrating for you as anyone, I imagine, and please, God, let them sort it out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, there's a human being at the end of this. It's not an organisation. I'm a human being. I've got family. I've got daughters. You know, there is a reality that mentally, you need resilience, but I'm only human. Can't always take it in spirit it's intended.
Yeah. You just talked about Twitter there, and I know, because I see it, that sometimes there are the most extraordinary pile-ons.
Yes.
And hopefully most of the time you manage to dismiss it as a sort of very vocal, small minority. But sometimes it feels a bit extreme, both it piling on to the UKH handles, but also your personal handle.
Yeah.
What's that like?
It's really hard. It's really hard. And whatever you see on the pylons, not believe my DM.
Really? Yeah. Well, I guess they have to be open because of your...
My DMs are open. I've got help in the industry through COVID and beyond. Lots of people reach out to me on my DMs to ask for help and support. And for everything you see me doing publicly, there's hours and hours of work that is done voluntary in my own time, just trying to help people get through and navigate some of it. I have reported 12 DMs in the last week on the back of that pylon. You get it with every woman in the public eye. I find it interesting that the men in the industry generate a pylon on the women. And then it's just a free-for-all. And, you know, we have politicians who read all of that, and the industry is just attacking the person trying to be their voice and face. So it's a sewer at times, but I think people need to think a little bit more carefully about who's reading and watching what's going on there. And think twice, because there's a human being. And that's happened, you know, we've seen it with some of the journalists, some of the female journalists in the industry too have said that. And I just think people need to think.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. Just talk to us about the campaigning landscape. Obviously, there's a general election 12, 18 months away. What are the big asks and how are you talking to the two main parties?
In reality, we've got probably 6 months to make a difference to start to inform that. And there's a lot of work that's gone on before. It does also mean that impacts what you can do with this current government, irrespective of the general election. They don't have time to push through legislation. So we are looking really at very short-term tactical issues that we need to push within the next 4 to 6 months. And that's why we've got to focus at the moment on business rates, because there's a key deficient point at the autumn statement. Does the Chancellor increase it by inflation, which would put everybody's bills up by 7% in April? And does he remove the hospitality relief? So there is a short inflection point. But then looking ahead, it's about broader structural environment. And those campaigning issues then would be around, how do we generate more demand? We've clearly got spare capacity. How do we generate growth? And you need VAT cuts to stimulate. We know that worked when Gordon Brown did it. It worked in COVID. So VAT cuts stimulate demand, structural reform of business rates in order to be able to unlock that investment very rapidly and generate that additional growth. And then thirdly, tackling the labour shortages that hold us back and stop us from meeting demand. So we're talking then to the Labour Party about those three key areas.
We're really delighted to be partnering with Imbiba for Hospitality Against Homelessness, the only payment way podcast. Imbiba are the leading private equity firm in UK hospitality, leisure and experiential industries. They back some of our best known and most exciting growth companies, names like Peter Pilgrims, F1 Arcade and Big Fan Collective, to mention just three. By backing talent, providing growth funding and lending their invaluable sector expertise, they make a massive difference, helping to shape the future of these amazing businesses and our industry. For more, visit imbiba.com. That's Imbiba, imbiba.com. Thanks, Imbiba. It's great to have you with us. A quick word on our podcast partner, Britvic. We're thrilled to be partnering Britvic for Hospitality Against Homelessness, the only A Payment Way podcast. Britvic is a global organisation with 38 much-loved brands sold in over 100 countries. From Fruit Shoot and Robinson's to Jimmy's Iced Coffee and J2O, for Britvic it's all about enjoying life's everyday moments today and creating a better tomorrow. Britvic wants to contribute positively to the world around us. It's why its Healthier People, Healthier Planet sustainability strategy is at the heart of everything its teams do. And it's why Britvic are proud supporters of Only a Pavement Away. Thank you, Britvic. And presumably with these asks, demonstrating an ROI is an absolute imperative.
Absolutely. I mean, again, that goes back to your point about campaigning, pressure group, noise. What you need is really solid, authoritative data, economic data. And what we're going to do is make it open source. We'll put it on our website. Everybody can use it. Anybody who spends 2 minutes having to go up on Twitter, take that as 2 minutes, take a look at our website, link to a letter that you can send to your MP. That's the way you get change, if using the system to our advantage. But for every time a minister turns around and says to me, I haven't had a single letter in this on this in my post bag, it just means you're losing the argument. But authoritative data, really key information. We get massive support from our members. Our members are fantastic at giving us membership survey feedback, grassroots information, so we've got the case to take. And then we can take it forward and make it a reality. And we put together a manifesto, as we've done for mayoral elections, local elections, general elections, and you've had plenty of those in recent years. So we've got a key set of asks.
And just thinking about back to COVID, coming out of COVID, and the significant people and workforce challenges, that does seem to have eased, but still feels like an issue. Where are we on people and workforce and careers?
You're right, it is easing. It's not as acute as it was. Now we've got staff. The issue is the quality and the training and how we can upgrade them and the investment we're needing to make, which is why apprenticeship levy reform is so key. Being able to have access to those funds or shorter, sharper training to get people work ready and job ready. Why the pilot projects we're currently doing with DWP are key as well. But in terms of the overall headline numbers, we're down from a labour shortage of vacancies of 15%, they're now down at 9%. So it's getting better, but that still means 130,000 jobs unfilled. And that's why we're still working and trying every trick in the book, making sure you've got routes through for ex-offenders, ex-veterans, people who are leaving care, long-term sick, disabled, providing those routes back to meaningful jobs and qualifications and careers.
I think that seems like a perfect opportunity to get into Only a Pavement Away. Just talk a little bit about, you know, why you and UKH are such big supporters of Only a Pavement Away.
Well, I think probably I was one of the earliest supporters. So I remember having a drink with Greg in a bar in Waterloo.
You got Gregged.
I got Gregged, and he is a force of nature. But also it really resonated because it's something that I'm equally passionate about. You know, I look at people in our industry. I think I've said it at our Christmas lunch a couple of times as well. Everybody in our industry owes a debt of gratitude because all of them have been given an opportunity. We all have a story that says, thankfully, I got into hospitality, it allowed me to do X, Y, and Z. And therefore, I feel it's incumbent upon us who've had those opportunities to try and give them back to some of the most vulnerable in society. And if we can do that, it's good for the individual fighting community and it's good for business. Yeah, if you take only a page away, when we were looking at people who were homeless or nearly homeless, they're in a vicious cycle and just need to get a break. So if we can give them that break, or we can give people who are coming out of prison that break, they are going to be some of our most loyal, most hardworking individuals who can work within the sector. So I've just done a call this morning talking about Only a Pavement Away at the launch of Unlocking Hospitality, which is in prisons. It's a national scheme that the Ministry of Justice and the Prison Service is doing, saying hospitality is our biggest partner and our best partner to get jobs for ex-offenders and move people through. And they are good jobs, good quality jobs, can give people added benefits. So they, in government, are extolling the benefits of hospitality as an employer. Yeah, off transformation, and that's so, you know, the work that Greg's done, the work that Only a Pavement Away has done, and the work that we've all been doing alongside it to be able to promote the positives. And if you promote the positives, then government does take the seriously, look back and say, oh, okay, that sector is doing everything it can. Maybe we will look at some of the other changes. Maybe we will talk about immigration. But we're not just going there with a begging bowl saying, please help, we can't sort this out ourselves. We're putting our own house in order. We're doing the right thing for the right reasons.
You mentioned some really vulnerable people, the most vulnerable people in society. It strikes me, sometimes it feels like they're more vulnerable than they should be, such as prison leavers walking out the gates with £46 in their pockets and the possessions that they went into prison with.
Yeah.
So unnecessarily hard situation for them to try and overcome.
It is, and I think that's why Only a Pavement Away is so important as an intervention tool at that point. Same applies to homeless and other vulnerable people as well. There is a cycle that has to be broken. What happens if you turn up out of prison? You've got nowhere to sleep, nowhere to have a wash or a shower, no decent clothes, and then you're expecting them to get an interview for a job. And we wonder why they fall back into criminality, or they go back to where they lived before, where there might be drugs and gangs, and then they fall back into their old way of life. How do you expect them to rehabilitate if you don't support? That's why I'm so passionate about Only a Pavement Away, because it isn't just about linking people with jobs and filling vacancies. It's about looking at the whole person and trying to make sure that we've got that network that takes them forward. You've got the same issues with people coming out in care systems, same issues with young people who've got complex disabilities. And those are the points that we can step in. And it's very basic stuff. You know, until you sit down and talk to somebody, you don't realise how much our industry already gives. So you never just have a job. We've bought your uniform, we've paid for your food. And fundamentally, and this is where, you know, it links to Hospitality Rising and the campaign about work fast, rise young, same kind of ethos. You are straight away into a support network and a team. That's what hospitality gives you. You never have that immediate camaraderie again as you do walking into a bar to be with a team that's delivering fantastic service and doing a great job, and it's fun and people are there to look after you, and people do to look after you and do their, oh, you're all right, mate. So I think that's where we come into our own.
Thank goodness for Only a Pavement Away and the big heart of the industry. It feels like there is a vacuum there that shouldn't be there.
It shouldn't be, but there are always going to be people who fall through the gaps. And the advantage of our industry is that it is the ultimate meritocracy, and it is one of social mobility, a story of social mobility. And it's where lots of people get their first taste of work, even if they don't stay with us and make a career. We give them those life skills, we give them that ability to have something on their CV, and they're accessible jobs, that there are no barriers. You know, even if you start at the entry level, with no experience, no education, no training, that doesn't stop you from running your own company, being on the board, being the head of sector representation, campaign groups and trade politics. There is nothing holds you back.
And I think business as a force for good is such a massive opportunity for hospitality.
It's huge. And if you are looking at the general election, bringing it right back to the campaigning priorities into politics, that is what politicians are going to be looking for. They don't have all the answers. We're into a world where we've got massive government debt. We can't look to the state to solve everything.
What's next? What do you see as the opportunities for hospitality?
Well, I think we need to also make sure that the industry gets the credit and appreciated for being so dynamic and innovative. And, you know, everybody talks about AI and shiny tech and innovation. We're just living and breathing it and doing it. Every decade or so, the industry completely reinvents itself. Casual dining on the high street, it's a complete reinvention. The sort of, you know, the wasabis and the grab and go and the itsus, that's really recent, that's innovative. The AI that's going in on labour scheduling and resource planning to automate the mundane and free up staff to do the great things. Again, I'm not sure that anybody really appreciates that and sees and understands the innovation. So I think we need to be better at telling those stories, and that is going to be one of the future areas. Clearly, if we look to sort of the future, you know, carbon net zero, the challenges that are coming down the track there.
And on sustainability and carbon and this huge sort of decarbonisation of our economy, where is hospitality and are we moving fast enough?
Yes, we are moving fast. Considering the challenges that we've been in, I think it's remarkable that the industry has come together, worked collaboratively. That's another lesson that's learned from COVID. We always have been much more collaborative than any other sector, but even more so now, we've done a lot of open source. Come together to share best practice, to share learnings, to give the tips and tricks to the smaller players in the sector of how they can decarbonize. Because it's a big, scary thought, you know, carbon net zero by 2050, where do you start? And we've got our roadmap that's 2040, 2030 for phase one. We've got calculators, we've got tips and tricks, we've got issues that you can do, because if we make a small number of meaningful changes, then it adds up incrementally to a very big change. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Dave Brailsford. And make a large number, a larger volume of small changes, massive impact. And we're already making much more progress there than I think the industry gives itself credit for.
It still feels very hard at the moment for some operators. Even the ones that are doing really well, you get the sense that it's relentlessly full on and everyone's working very hard. Yes. How do operators focus on the here and now, delivering the shift, managing the P&L day to day, whilst also having one eye on this need to move further into the responsible business era?
But that's the role of the trade association. That's why you become a member of the trade association, to get that help and support. But also, you know, I've had people say it to me, you know, I've joined UK Hospitality, so you can do the horizon scanning, you can make sure I'm covered. I know you tell me when I need to do something or I need to be aware of it, and I can concentrate on the day-to-day. You're right, so much at the moment is practical, get through next weekend, how do I manage that? How do I get to the end of the year? What do I do about the next 6 months? Our job as a trade body is to lift some of that off their shoulders, take responsibility for it, stick our head above the parapet to say the unpalatable things, you know, talking truth to power or saying, what do you want us to focus on, government, in the here and now? Making sure we pay people, passing through the national living wage, keeping employment numbers up, keeping the businesses afloat. My job is to be the person who puts the head above the parapet, who does the foresight scanning and comes back and makes sense of it.
Last couple of questions. First one is, how do we scale Only a Pavement Away? It's such a brilliant thing in so many ways, brilliant for our industry, brilliant to be supportive of our old people. Just put 400 people into work through Only a Pavement Away. How do we make it 4,000?
We need more employers to be actively involved, and we need to make sure that the employers have that smooth transition from the top-down commitment from the CEOs, which is fantastic in our sector, to making sure it's as easy as possible in a ground level to be able to recruit those people, to get more people into jobs. And then, you know, we continue with the fundraising.
And what would your message be to anyone that perhaps isn't yet working with Only Pavement Away?
Get involved. Contact any of us, who are ambassadors, who are trustees, who shouted about Only Pavement Away on podcasts like this. Reach out, we'll put you in touch, we'll explain what it means. And we'll work with you to be as flexible as we can to meet your needs. You know, if prison leavers aren't your area that you feel is appropriate, you might want to have people coming out of care, or there might be expectations, there might be different routes through. We need a range of careers and opportunities.
Having had the opportunity to work with you from time to time, I know that you're someone that always gets there in terms of the political music, the media story, in terms of judgment and nous and knowing which way it's going to go. I can see you hate this question. You always nail it. I don't want to blow too much smoke, but you're always there, pretty much ahead of everyone else. Where does that come from?
Honestly, I think it's having studied English literature. And I'm going to big up the fact that it's not all about... it's not all about chess and maths, Prime Minister, or Dominic Cummings. English students can do a lot of things. I was thinking about it when you were asking the questions to where it came from, but part of it is my brain works that way. I played the piano and then I just musical. And I think you have to get right-left brain coordination so I can split, therefore, and have the creative and the logical. But going back to English, it's a bit like hospitality. But most importantly, it means that you can read people really well because that's what you're being taught to do. So I put it down to being an English literature graduate, which I bet wasn't the answer you were expecting.
I like it. It wasn't what I was expecting. And then finally, your future... I think the industry is very lucky to have UK Hospitality and to have you. I think you've done a fantastic job for the industry. Why do you keep doing it and how long will you keep doing it for?
I'm not going anywhere. Why do I keep doing it? Because I love the industry and I've got a passion for it. It's the best job in the world. I can't think of another job you could do in my sphere. So, there are lots of brilliant jobs, but if you take my skill set and my sphere of what I work in, where's there a better job to work in? And work in an industry with fantastic people. I can talk to any MP that I want to, or politician, or local councillor, because they're in every place. I'm not talking widgets in factories. I'm not talking anything like water or energy or all of those kind of issues. They might not be able to help, but fundamentally they like hospitality. They know and appreciate what they do. So I get to go and have meetings in some of the best hotels in the world, the best bars in the world. I eat in some of the best restaurants. It's brilliant. So I love my industry. I have done since I started working in it in Whitbread. I just love it. And so that's what keeps me going. That's the passion, is passion for the industry and the people. And I want to do the best I can. This industry can do so much, give so much, be so much, but it needs that support. And there are people who need my support in telling their story and articulating, and I do it to the best of my ability. So I just have to keep going.
Brilliant. Well, look, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate the time. A quick word of thanks to BrewDog. BrewDog have been absolutely brilliant in helping us pull this podcast together, giving us unlimited free access to their podcast facilities in Waterloo in London. If you haven't been, check it out. It's an amazing space, almost 30,000 square feet of bars, restaurants, cafes. There's a slide, there's a bowling alley, there's meeting rooms, and of course, there's the podcast studio. Thank you, BrewDog. We couldn't have done it without you. Steve, thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, Mark.
You have been designated an Only a Pavement Away powerhouse. Tell us a bit about why you think that might be, how you're involved with the charity.
It goes back to a very early conversation with Greg. Greg is a unique individual. He's such a humble guy. Never has the answers, but very clear on what he's trying to do. And I think, that quality has led so many people to lean in and lend their help and expertise and passion for what he's grown from nothing, from literally the idea that him and Jill had, walking down the embankments and seeing a very real problem in society, but as importantly, hospitality absolutely there in every community. So how do we connect the two? So it kind of goes back a long way. Greg approached me and wanted to get me involved. It wasn't a tough conversation. I could see the transformational work that Greg was doing and had the capacity to do on such a large scale across the UK. And it's only a win-win-win for everybody involved, from the members that are being affected and these guys, are facing some incredibly tough, life positions. And hospitality is transformational in what it does. It really helps people at every level. If that's an entry-level job and we hear those stories, we should hear them more, we should shout about them. You come into our trade at that entry level, maybe when secondary education hasn't been a fantastic experience for you, but that doesn't diminish your potential and your capacity to grow and really add something back. And we've got brilliant entrepreneurs in our sector, like no other, that can be supported. So it's already got a great track record of transforming. Our charity work is beyond comparison, really, because we're so motivated to connect people and do good in what we do. So when Greg spoke about his passion, his vision, it was just so easy to kind of get behind it and see how I could support to the best of my ability to connect those opportunities, because we have, material problem in hospitality. There is no doubt. We need great people, great talent to drive this experiential business that we're in, connecting people, making people feel better about themselves. And undoubtedly, unfortunately, as time develops, yet more and more people find themselves in incredibly difficult circumstances, facing homelessness, and coming out of prison, and increasingly and really, soberly, so many veterans that are struggling, post forces to get that purpose again in their next stage of life. And Only a Pavement Away connects all of those things.
Mm. So one of the phrases we've heard a lot is people getting Gregged. So you got Gregged. And then you've actually taken part in a couple of key fundraisers. Tell us about those.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my getting Greg started with him, asking him to get involved with Only a Pavement Away as an advisor and then latterly a trustee, which I'm incredibly proud to be a part of. And he's got such a talented group of trustees as well, which is fantastic. But yeah, the fundraising was another element, is what could we do? And again, it tapped into what is so special about hospitality, which is collaboration, about people coming together with a common aim, putting aside, any competitive elements, which is so unusual in closed sectors, but just works where we are. So yes, it kind of started with some peddling. The force that is Katie Moses convinced us all to take on the challenge to go to Jordan, which was an absolutely spectacular experience. I mean, incredibly tough. You're trying to peddle a bike through soft sand in the middle of the desert is generally no fun, and we had some tough days doing it. But a tremendous camaraderie coming together, because it was all united with that single purpose of that every pound we were raising was going to make such a difference to people's lives. That continued. So I very, very proudly led a peddling two pubs ride last year in North Yorkshire, which you very kindly came along as well. And yet again, it was the camaraderie, it was the coming together, the passion, the energy, and raised obviously a huge amount of money in the two events. And Katie obviously took an international ride to Sri Lanka. I mean, to raise over £400,000 is absolutely spectacular. And there's been some other things along the way. I've been made to sleep out rough overnight, which was such a reflective experience. One night where we didn't really get any sleep. We were woken up every 5 minutes by sirens, alarms, shouting, general noise. And what it did to us the next day, it completely changed our mental well-being. We didn't feel centered. We felt out of kilter. And to then reflect forward that we've got so many people living that every single day and without the ability to normalize and come back to that kind of safe space without that fear of something happening was just an incredibly reflective experience.
A couple more questions. One, with your day job as chief executive of the BII, and as a trustee of Only a Pavement Away and various other things that you do, it strikes me you've got a hell of a lot of purpose going on in your life. Just tell us, why is that important?
It's why we get out of bed in the morning, let's be honest. From the BII perspective, the whole team, and I do mean the whole team, is so motivated to keep pubs thriving at the heart of every community. We feel passionate about that. They're not just small businesses. They're incredibly transformational spaces. Again, we forget sometimes that they're the only now social spaces where people can come together, feel connected. Somebody said the other day, it's the only place that we tend to start a conversation with strangers. But how important is that in an increasingly socially isolated world? And what they do to look beyond themselves. And that's been, again, inspiring, during the last few years, particularly when our members have been facing, really the potential end of their long-standing viable businesses. Their attention has been on their customers and their communities, looking out for people, making sure they're okay. And that is just so defining in terms of why hospitality is so special. But yes, purpose is key. Only a Pavement Away has an incredibly clear purpose. It has the potential to scale nationally as well. And I'm supporting Greg with everything I can do to make that happen, because we absolutely need what Greg does. And what Greg does is very, very special. It's not just about jobs in hospitality. It's really about looking after the member, and being empathetic to their needs. So if that's a roof over their head, if it's looking after some, some challenges they're facing in their personal life. And I think that's, again, what hospitality businesses do so well, particularly, pubs, which I'm incredibly proud of, they look out for their team members. They're keeping a weathered eye. So I go back to their transformational spaces.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. Finally, what would your message be to anyone who might be thinking about getting involved with Only a Pavement Away?
Well, simply get involved. I mean, what an incredible organisation. Again, it brings the best of hospitality, brings us together. Again, we are just one team with a single purpose. I recently did, again, the Cook and Dine event, which was a phenomenal occasion. There's such an energy and a buzz in the room, and so proud to be a part of that. But there's so many things that people can do. If it's from fundraising, awareness, you know, is absolutely key. From an employer perspective, you know, there's candidates, incredibly talented, you know, candidates with great potential that can come through Only a Pavement Away. So it's a source of talent, it's a source of potential going forward. So, you know, get involved, speak to Greg. There's so many ways you can get involved. If it's Greg or Dolores or the brilliant team that he's got at Only a Pavement Away, there's so many opportunities. As Greg would say, if it's simple of giving, you know, £5, it's £5 you had more than 30 seconds ago, all the way through to get involved, because you could have your next GMs, your entrepreneurs coming from Only a Pavement Away, because it's just a brilliant source of talent.
Brilliant. Steve, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, before we head off, the final words rightly belong to Greg Mangum, the founder and CEO of Only a Pavement Away. As we sign off for this pilot mini-series, he has a few words to say on why hospitality is such a unique and wonderful place to be a part of. I think we can all agree to that. Greg, over to you.
Hi, I'm Greg Mangum, CEO and founder of Only a Pavement Away. You may have heard of us if you're in the hospitality industry, but I'm just going to give you some stats. Over the next 5 years, we're looking to get 9,000 members into work. They will add millions to society by having their benefits reduced, paying rent, buying shopping, buying clothes. And when you think about it, there are 330,000 people facing homelessness. There are 9,000 veterans on the street, and every year 78,000 prisoners leave prison. So for us to get, say, 5,000 in the year 2028 is a very small number, but I need your help to do it. I need to grow the team. And something you might like to know, 85 pence of every financial pound donated to Only a Pavement Away goes to supporting our members. And the other thing you need to know is there are no big director salaries. The only people who get paid are the employment team and the marketing team. The rest of us do it because we believe in it and we love our industry.
Well, that is a wrap, as they say, on this, our first mini-series of Hospitality Against Homelessness, the Only a Pavement Away podcast. It's been a real pleasure to host and interview some of the pioneering voices in this dynamic and creative industry, the industry that we all love. Thank you so much to BrewDog, Britvic and Imbiba for making this happen. Thanks so much to our guests for coming and sparing the time to chat to us. Thank you very much for our Only a Pavement Away powerhouses, those people that are doing amazing things to raise funds and the profile and the standing of the charity. We hope you've enjoyed listening. We will be back in 2024 with our first full series. So we will see you then. Stay tuned. Bye for now.